Chapter 28. Interviews. It was late. Chotin dismissed Dayson from his post as a travel-stained and cold Kaimus entered the room. Kaimus, gaunt and bald, removed his cloak, setting it by the fire to dry. Chotin secretly feared the magician, but tried to assume an air of confidence and command, despite the clenching of his stomach. Most outside of Ogmir didn't know what Kaimus did for Chotan's father, but Chotan knew the man's power and what deeds he had done to ensure that Torbrand Cairn's rule went unchallenged. He wore a white robe underneath a long open coat of deep red, embroidered with golden thread. Chotan eyed him, trying to discern what he was thinking.
"Well, you returned more quickly than I thought you would, Kaimus. I trust you didn't overexert yourself on this matter."
Kaimus, who was warming his hands over the fire, shot Chotan a displeased look. Wrinkles lined the sharp features of his thin, tall face, deepened by the exhaustion of his journey. Beady and intelligent hazel eyes met Chotan's, and Chotan signalled for him to sit across from the table from him. Kaimus strode over and pulled back the chair in front of the desk and sat down heavily.
"Exerting much effort on this matter simply wasn't possible. The tree was bare, so to speak, as is my stomach." "I'll see to your comfort after I have your report," Chotan said impatiently. He had just started his own meal, but pushed it aside. "You learned nothing, then?"
"Nothing of much value, I'm afraid. Your father saw to that. He completely obliterated the young man's village and those nearby in the first months of the war. In fact, I could find nothing useful about him until I talked with the Shadan and Captain Omar."
"You talked to my father?"
"Yes, and you shall be thankful I did, or my mission would have been entirely wasted. He was quite excited to hear Jen was alive. As most suspected, your father trained him. The stories about his killing Cormyth and defying you arrived soon after I did."
"How did he take Cormyth's death?"
Chotan asked, blood starting to boil.
"His reaction surprised me. He was ecstatic. I got the feeling from talking with him that he considered Jen his masterwork. In fact, the biggest news I have is that Torbrand has changed his mind and will accompany you to Elder Lurimora come spring. Not out of any love for you, of course, but because he wishes to see Jen again. If you're lucky, he might kill Jen himself. I fear he has become rather bored with being undefeatable."
"If you could arrange for them to kill each other, so much the better," Chotan growled. "To think my father was the one who trained him. I should have known only he could create such a monster."
"Jen's training was unique, according to Omar. Those scars he wears were all given to him to train him. Few consider the boy a monster, though. He's practically become a saint among all but your most loyal of subjects. If you wish to curry favour with the populace, you would do well to appear to feel the same."
"Is that all the mighty Kaimus can come up with?"
Chotan disparaged, frustration clenching his fist.
"I sent you to find more about him so we could manipulate him, shame him."
"That would be stupid. The way you've behaved toward him, and indeed all of Rugothian society, is disadvantageous to you. I'm determined to winter here and correct your missteps. It will be difficult. You seem to have forgotten everything you've ever learned about this nation. Trying to bed the Shalane before your wedding was the pinnacle of idiocy. Turning the Rugothian challenge of honour into an Ogmerian challenge of possession was just as misguided."
"How was I supposed to know? Who has ever beaten Cormyth?"
"I'm not here to discuss your mistakes. I'm here to fix them. You will do as I say, or find yourself in dire trouble."
Chotan folded his arms.
"Just what is it that I am supposed to do?"
"My goodness, where to begin? First, you want to kill or shame Jen, but since you have failed to hide your dislike of him, even in the least degree, if anything untoward were to happen to him, you risk the blame being levelled at you."
"So I am to smile and say, 'How do you do?' when I see him? Should I give him some reward for his deeds to show my gratitude?"
Kaimus nodded.
"I would suggest doing just that. In fact, while I was with your father, I came up with a possibility that would be an excellent token of appreciation. No, how can I bear it? Do you know what songs they're singing in the taverns? What the kids chant in the streets? Gendified demon trance. Shatan turned pale and wet his pants. Jen fought and bled and nearly died. Shatan fell on the floor and cried. Shatan can play and hold his beer, but cannot stomach demon fear. The Shalane's Shatan's, as is his right. But who stays with her every night? Shatan is grand when times are fun, but come a fight, then Jen's the one.
Sounds accurate to me,
Caimus commented derisively. Shatan's cheeks flushed red as he trembled with anger.
You remember who you're talking to, Caimus, Shatan spat. I may not have my power yet, but you'll end up dead if I say so.
Caimus stood, meeting Shatan's gaze and intensity, and said a series of quick words Shatan didn't recognize. Shatan slumped back in his chair, body unable to move. He could feel Caimus force himself into his mind.
And you, Shatan, need to learn that the party is over.
Caimus's mouth did not move, voice pounding in Shatan's brain.
You send me off on some waste of a mission, simply because you're angry that you couldn't have your piece of the Shalane before your wedding day. You talk and philander and stumble around as if the world existed just to tolerate you. I taught you better than that. The world is political, Shatan, and perception matters. When you come into your power and the armies of all nations are at your back, Jen will matter nothing. But if you don't want to be on the battlefield facing down the hordes of an evil god all by yourself, then we have a lot of work to do. Some people will need to die, yes, but Jen should not be one of them.
Caimus released his hold, and Shatan sucked air.
Are you one of his admirers too, Caimus?
Shatan seethed, taking stock of himself.
His skill is certainly admirable, but that's not the point, Shatan.
Caimus returned to his seat.
Whether you like it or not, he has kept the people's spirits high. That works to your advantage. A dispirited populace would be much more difficult to rally when the time comes, especially if the ilk starts his work in earnest and things get miserable. As it is, everyone is anxious to march off to war for the Shalane. If you're smart, you'll leave Jen be. All he does is protect the Shalane. There are others here that are much more dangerous to you than him. Those we must discover and deal with. But first we must improve your position among Rugothians, the aristocracy in particular. I hardly talk to them at all, and I think I've been polite,
Shatan reported half-heartedly.
Are you really that daft?
Caimus retorted.
You offended the first mother of Rugoth. She is an extremely persuasive and devious woman. If she doesn't like you, then let me assure you that not a single one of the Regency will. From what I've gathered from my sources, she doesn't talk with you, she doesn't dine with you, she doesn't dance with you. Not even once since your initial blunder. Is that true?
Yes,
Shatan answered sheepishly.
I'm not sure we can repair that relationship, but we will try. We must think of some pretense for undoing your selection of Dacen as your bodyguard. We can't have someone that loyal to the Shalane close to you.
That will be easy, Shatan said. The Shalane asked me to release him a couple of weeks ago.
Good. Your concubines will all be dismissed from your possession and sent home tomorrow. You will tell the people that you did it, because the Shalane's glory undid your desire for any other woman, or some other such nonsense. There will be no more wanton carousing and public drunkenness. But it's winter, and there is nothing else to— No objections, Shatan. If you don't do as I say, I'll leave you on your own and let the Rugothians do what they will to you when you've offended them beyond their ability to tolerate it. You've taken your position as Haulric for granted. If you hadn't done so poorly in the presence of the demon, you may have had the privilege of continuing as you are. But not now. There is so much to do, but I do not have the patience or desire to review it with you tonight. Get a good night's rest. We start tomorrow, early. Now I need to go greet my brother, though my presence will bring him little pleasure, I'm sure.
Eldwina had long since fallen asleep, snoring loudly as she always had from her adjoining room. The lamp was trimmed low and its light suffused the curtains around the Shalane's bed with a soft yellow glow. Her own veil was off, blonde curls fanned about her head upon the elegantly embroidered pillows, and her hands laid one atop the other upon her stomach. She fancied that this would be the position the pure men would arrange her in were she to die, even though in death she suspected they would make her wear the veil. Sleep would not come, a crowded, noisy mind unsettling her and repelling every attempt at relaxation. She thought that once she had endured the betrothal, she would find some sense of peace at having fulfilled one part of her duty and having the winter to try to forget about the marriage and to enjoy the company of her friends and protectors. Instead, she felt worse. A strange blend of emotion squirmed inside her stomach, coalescing into a draining anxiety and depression. For one, she felt guilty for the way she thought about Fenner. In the weeks since Jen had reawakened, Jen and Fenner had spent every one of what few free moments they could manage together, their friendship deepening. Jen's maturity helped the woman in Fenner emerge, and Fenner brought a light into Jen's eye and taught him tenderness. Unbeknown to them, the Shalane sometimes used the walls to watch them when they strolled through the castle together, read books in the library, or just sat talking in the commons. Jen had even taken to teaching Fenner how to play the lute. While the Shalane couldn't hear what they were saying, their mutual pleasure was evident. The Shalane knew she should quit invading their privacy. She knew she should confess to Fenner and Jen and apologize. Unfortunately, while she couldn't say why, she found watching them irresistible, even though every time she did it, the dark canker of jealousy ate away at her. Fenner was living the Shalane's dream. Jen wasn't the blessed one or the savior of the world. He wasn't destined to rule kingdoms or lead armies. He was simply a good young man. And that was all the Shalane really wanted, and it was something she would not have in Shatan. Every time Fenner smiled at Jen and wrapped her arm in his, every time he sat beside her, gently showing her the proper fingering of the instrument, every song they sang together, every joke he told that had Fenner covering her mouth in shock and laughter, stung her until she wanted desperately to turn away. Only she never did. She realized that Fenner was now no stranger to jealousy. Jen's notoriety and reputation had spread, not the least of all, into the hearts and minds of young women inside and outside the castle. In front of the walls, the Shalane found that she was little better than the scullery maid who shot longing looks at Jen whenever he came to get his meal in the kitchen. Deep inside, the Shalane felt happy that Fenner had finally won Jen's attentions, but the feeling was deep enough to be considered buried. The dissatisfaction and sense of loneliness took their toll on her mood, and the Shalane wondered if Fenner divined her bitterness despite her best attempts to act as if all was the same between them. Tonight, after Eldwina retired, the Shalane did the worst possible thing for her attitude that she could imagine. She used the walls to spy on Shatan. Watching him engage in yet another night full of drunkenness and debauchery sent her spirits spiralling even lower, and she wondered how it was that her own childhood had been one where her duty and the rigid morality that was to enable it were taught unceasingly, while Shatan, it seemed, had grown up without a worry or care of any sort for duty, morality, or even a modicum of decency. The vessel Eldaloth would use to return to Kihal was to come from him as well, so how did her strictness profit anything when his carefree indulgence more than destroyed any hope for a holy union? As the memories of Shatan's night about town resurfaced in her mind, she threw aside the curtains of her bed and stood, determined to find a way to distract herself. She knew it had to be a couple of hours past midnight, but Jen was awake, and her mother had wished that she would talk to him. Because of her despair, she knew the conversation would do no service to Jen, but any conversation at all, even if a fight, would be better than lying around contemplating marital doom. As silently as she could, the Shalane retrieved a veil from a drawer and pulled it over her head. Taking a deep breath, she opened the door. While Fenner succeeded in coaxing emotion out of Jen's face, the Shalane wasn't surprised when Jen didn't even lift an eyebrow at her unexpected appearance in the middle of the night. Of course, he could sense her coming. "Are you well, Holiness?" he asked. The Shalane went to the wall opposite from where he stood and sat slumped against it, hugging her legs and putting her chin on her knees. "Would you quit using the holiness honorific? It makes me feel like we never met."
"Of course, Shalane. I apologize."
"And quit being sorry, too. People are always telling me how sorry they are for the stupidest things."
"Yes, Shalane."
"And don't answer me like I'm Captain Tolbrook barking orders to a bunch of idiot apprentices."
"I see. I will limit my responses to hand gestures and grunts from this point forward."
The Shalane tried to decipher his face. Irritatingly as ever, she couldn't make sense of it. She sat silently as Jen resumed his statuesque vigil without further comment. The Shalane stared at him to annoy him and wondered if he could tell that she was doing it in the dim light of the hallway.
"So,"
she said suddenly and sharply, seeing if she could get him to blink. It failed.
"Finna tells me you're teaching her to play the lute."
Jen raised his fist before him, moving it up and down at the wrist in a semblance of a head nodding yes. As out of sorts as she was, the Shalane couldn't help but smile.
"Stop it and talk to me," she said.
"I can't even say a simple holiness without causing offence."
"I bet you don't go around saying your ladyship to Fenner all the time, except when you are having a little fun at her expense. You've known me almost as long as you've known her."
"True," he said, "but Fenner isn't the holy Shalane either. In fact, holiness almost seems less formal than Shalane. That is a weighty title as much as it is your name."
"Then I shall need a new name for you to call me, one that won't weigh your tongue down so much. You know the ancient speech of the gods. Give me a new name from God's language."
Jen thought for a moment.
"Very well. How about Alumira Re Se Elenwe?"
"It sounds beautiful, and it rhymes. What does it mean?"
"It means one who picks fights when she should be sleeping."
"Alumira Re knows she should be sleeping, but has found that she can't. She has decided that she wants to go on a walk."
The Shalane stood and started toward the entrance to the maze. Jen intercepted her in a heartbeat, blocking the way.
"No, Shalane," he stated firmly. "Night is the friend of evil. It is too dangerous to have you outside the tower wards, especially so soon after the demon attack. Those responsible are still uncaught."
"I am Alumira Re, remember? Demons and scoundrels have no interest in her. And I am going. I will not stay cooped up in here a moment longer. You don't have to come, I suppose."
"Be reasonable, Alumira. I'm charged with keeping you safe. I must suggest a course of action that will most likely keep you out of harm's way. I couldn't bear it if something were to happen to you on my watch."
"But it would be all right if it happened under Jaren's watch, I suppose. Then it wouldn't be your fault, right? In that case, your reputation and honour would be intact."
"That's not what I meant, Alumira, and you know it."
"Look, Jen, I'm going out there. You can do one of two things. You can come with me, or..."
"Or what?"
"Or you'll have to lay hands on me and hold me here. Imagine the scandal."
With that, she skirted around her protector and resumed her course toward the entryway to the maze.
"Wait," Jen said, hurrying forward. "You'll be the one starting a scandal walking around the hall in your bedclothes. You need to change."
"Well, that's the first sensible thing you've said all night,"
the Shalane returned tartly.
"Do you have a cloak?"
"In my quarters."
"Well, let's fetch it and be on our way."
The Shalane followed Jen to his room, and he opened the door after taking a lamp from the wall to light his way. The Shalane peeked in, out of curiosity, finding the room as ascetic as his facial expressions. A mattress without a frame lay on the floor opposite an ancient armoire that had occupied the room since the first protectors. Besides the lute that leaned against the wall and a couple of books by the bed, no other decoration graced the walls. Dayson had spruced the quarters up nicely during his tenure, going as far as to hang a painting and a tapestry. Of course, he came from a wealthy family. Jen had nothing.
"Did they not issue you a bed frame?"
"No," Jen said. "Apparently the one that was here was Dayson's, that he had brought from home. It had some sentimental value. The mattress suits me fine."
"A bed frame with sentimental value?"
the Shalane commented, perplexed.
"What could Dayson possibly find sentimental about a bed frame? Who told you it had sentimental value?"
Jen shrugged.
"The servants carrying it out. Why don't we stay here and summon some servants to give you an explanation?"
"Nice try, Jen. Give me the cloak."
The Shalane let Jen help her into the cloak he retrieved from the armoire. It was voluminous on her, but since they were of a similar height, it didn't drag on the ground. As they wound around the maze and out into the antechamber of the Shalanes, the other dark guard snapped to attention, amazement and concern plain on their faces. The Shalane ignored them. Knocking Jen off balance, for some reason, improved her mood, and she wasn't about to stop. She led him over the bridge and through the long hallway filled with guards into the manor proper, entering the great hall through a side door near the kitchens. Moonlight, strong enough to cast clear shadows, poured in through the high windows and into the hall. The large fires that normally warmed the room had long since faded to embers, and the Shalane crossed her arms for warmth as she walked the length of the hall to her mother's throne and sat down heavily in it. Jen stood behind her, where Cadean stood when guarding the First Mother. The Shalane sat restlessly, shifting positions every few minutes and exhaling roughly from time to time.
"Have a seat on Aldredan Mickmere's throne, Jen," the Shalane said, signalling to the ornately carved marble throne behind her.
"I most certainly will not. That will be a great offence to your entire nation."
"Have it your way. I think a great number of people have sat in it on the sly since his disappearance. What would you think of being a king, Jen?"
"Really, Shalane?"
"Alumira!"
"Milady, can we have this conversation someplace safer?"
"Answer the question, and don't nag me about safety anymore,"
the Shalane commanded, trying to put enough weight into it to shut him up.
"I think I would find it bothersome."
"And why is that?"
"I would scarce have a moment to myself, if the First Mother is any indication."
"You value being alone, then?" the Shalane remarked. "Strange."
"Not so much being alone," Jen returned, "as being able to have some say about when I am. Kings are always at the beck and call of others."
"But kings have all the say they want. You could command everyone away whenever you wanted, and sit in your room all the day long and talk to your bedpost. Well, your mattress, if you liked."
"Good ones wouldn't do such a thing," Jen stated.
"Why not?"
"Because they never feel comfortable leaving anything undone, and there are no end of things to be done. That was my point in the first place."
"I see."
The Shalane stood, turning to face him.
"Did you know that I am the second highest-ranking aristocrat in Rugoth?"
"Of course."
"Well, it doesn't quite seem like it now, does it?"
She turned and started down the dais stairs, arms raised.
"Behold, the high and holy Shalane, the Mother of God. She has no say in anything and has absolutely nothing to do but sit around and wait to marry a dog."
She got louder as she continued, heedless of the guards outside the doors that might hear her. Jen followed her.
"Please, Shalane."
"Here I am, the paragon of virtue and healing, beloved of all, but when my Ogmerian fiancé— no, he wasn't even my fiancé then— when some Ogmerian warlord tried to drag me off to his bed a full year before our marriage in front of a room full of aristocrats and nobles who were sworn to protect my honour, who actually does something? A complete stranger. Some nobody serf from some nowhere lumbering town. From Tolnor. From Tolnor! My mother looks at the floor. Dacen looks away. Jaren scowls but follows along. But is that the worst? Oh, certainly not!"
Her voice was cracking now, and Jen stood silently as she yelled at him from several feet away, a shaft of moonlight dividing her into light and shadow.
"Now everyone knows what Shatan is, some piggish, whoring drunk who wouldn't know decency, honour or love if he tripped over them in harsh daylight. But not one person thinks I shouldn't have him, however wretchedly different we are. Will everyone just turn away on my wedding day too? There's the prophecy, Shalane. The child must be born, Shalane. Shatan must be the father, you the cow, Shalane. So what is a fine, upstanding protector like Jen to do? He saves my honour and my dignity so that I can have it for one more year and anticipate hour by hour the day Shatan will strip me of it when he welcomes me into his wonderful family of filthy concubines. What does Jen do next? He throws himself in front of a demon to miraculously save me from a horrible death, so a few weeks later I can stand hand in hand with Shatan before the pontiff and obediently promise my life to him. Eldaloth, help me, Jen. Are you protecting me or killing me?"
Rage dissolved into sadness, and she stood sobbing in the middle of the floor, head down and hands over her face.
"Come on," Jen said, gently taking her arm and coaxing her toward the steps.
A little air will do you well.
She let herself be guided up the curved stairways to the balcony, where Jen opened the door to the outside. The midwinter night was chill, a biting breeze slicing through the protection of the cloak. The long balcony on the eastern side of the great hall looked out over Mickmere at the base of the hill below, and was bathed in the light of the moon's Min and Duum. Being late at night, and late in the year, the weak light coloured everything a soothing deep blue and grey. During the spring and summer, the balcony had many plant beds brimming with bright and fragrant flowers. All these were dead, wasted stalks, twisted in a frozen tangle over each other. The smallish trees and shrubs were scraggly and bare, save one evergreen, the sole survivor of the season. The Shalane walked to the arched stone balustrade and stood rigidly in front of it, and Jen joined her there. She took several minutes to calm herself, reaching up under her veil to wipe her eyes. Jen observed her carefully, and under his compassionate gaze, she felt tension slowly leave her muscles. At last she put her forearms on the balustrade and leaned forward, breathing deeply.
"I suppose you want your cloak back," the Shalane commented, voice worn.
"I have no need for it."
"You don't feel the cold?"
"It's not that I don't feel it. It just doesn't mean anything to me, if you can understand that."
"I am sorry, Jen. I shouldn't have put you, of all people, through this. I should have stayed in my room and kept this, whatever this is, to myself. I am supposed to be the healer. And here I am, yelling and whining at you like some 3-year-old brat who can't get her way. I'm not quite what you thought you had sworn your life to, am I?"
"On the contrary," Jen replied. "We commoners quite expect these outbursts from you unpredictable aristocratic types." The Shalane laughed quietly, sniffling as she wiped her eyes again.
"You are not a commoner any more.
Once a nobody serf, always a nobody serf."
"Oh, Jen, please don't take that comment about you being nobody from nowhere seriously. You know I don't think that. You are an important symbol of strength to everyone, including me."
"Yes, but falsely, I think. The way the stories are told, I danced around on the demon's head before he broke every bone in my body with a lucky swing. All I want to do is protect you. Whatever is thought of what I do matters little, as long as you are safe."
"But it does,"
the Shalane contradicted, gripping his forearm and marvelling at its strength.
"But it's not just the demon. It started at the trials. It continued with your defence of my honour. It serves you well to despise the fame, but never deny its importance. The people need something to believe in as dark times approach. Shatan and I are only the potential of what may come. For now we are powerless and weak. People may love the idea of the perfect beauty and the saviour of all, but they can't grasp it. I can't even grasp it, as you now know all too well. But your place in history, all of us can understand. Your present actions and obvious virtues we can imitate, and you have inspired immeasurable goodness that you should feel proud to have fostered."
"Maybe," Jen said, "but you seem to have forgotten that you do the same." She released his arm and turned her gaze back out into the night.
"The only good I've done is either imagined or yet to come, so if I have some reputation, then it is certainly fabricated and not deserved."
"Not true." "Do not protest. Do you know when I saw you for the first time?"
"At the feast. Or did you see me at the docks?"
"Before then."
"Really? When?"
she asked, curiosity piqued. "I ask you to keep this to yourself, if you would."
"Of course I will."
"Fenner may have described to you my appearance and dress when I came to the tournament field as like someone straight from the damned quarter."
"I was.
I was in the damned quarter the day before the trials, the day you came to visit the children." The Shalane's hand went to her mouth.
"The damned quarter? How did you end up there, of all places?"
"That is a story for another day. What I want to tell you is that I watched you in secret when you came. You were nervous, but you had compassion and love for those wretched children. You sat with them, you fed them, you sang to them. You held them on your lap, uncaring of what it did to what you wore or what discomfort it caused you. It was then that I knew you were virtuous. You were kind, you were beautiful, and that you had more power to do good in this world than I would ever have. In short, that you were worth protecting, whatever it cost.
Shaitan will be no boon to you, but you need not let him destroy that good part of you that I saw that day. She sighed.
Sometimes I think he already has. Thank you, Jen. I will try to look forward with a bit more hope, and I promise I will never yell at you again. You certainly don't deserve to be the victim of my frustration.
Feel at liberty to yell at me whenever you like. Whether you need a protector or someone to verbally abuse, I'm at your service. The Shalane laughed again, feeling lighter of spirit. There was something old about Jen, as her mother had said. Everything and everyone around him might writhe in tumult, but like a garden wall he stood calm, come sun or storm, abundance or want.
I think Fenner would object if I took advantage of your good nature too often.
At the mention of her name, Jen smiled, the first time the Shalane had seen him do so in person. A wave of jealousy washed over her, and she fought it back with effort.
Is Fenner much like Regina?
In some ways. Regina, like Fenner, was beautiful and playful, though Regina was more devious and cunning. It was difficult to tell what Regina felt. But Fenner shows her emotion plainly, for which I am grateful.
You may wish to return the courtesy of showing emotion plainly, if you want to win her. You do face some competition.
Kimdan, I know.
Yes, but other young men at court pay her a great deal of attention as well, even those who don't give her a good look when she passes by.
I've seen them give you both a good look.
This bothers you?
The Shalane asked. Fenner, I can understand. But you are always veiled and wearing a loose robe to hide your shape. For all any man knows, you might be bloated, scaly, and hideous.
Thank you,
the Shalane laughed, though he seemed perfectly serious.
Well, she is quite a beauty. You should feel quite fortunate that she takes an interest in you.
I do, he said, and smiled again.
Another smile from the dead-faced man. He must be stricken indeed.
The Shalane quipped. Jen smoothed his face but answered nothing, and the Shalane respected his silence. She felt grateful for her mother's advice. Talking with Jen gave her a stillness of mind and brought a smile to her face when, but an hour before, she would have thought both impossible. Her emotions spent, exhaustion prevailed upon her, and the chill made the warmth and comfort of her bed suddenly appealing.
We should go,
the Shalane said, taking Jen's arm the way she saw Fenner do.
It's difficult to see through this veil in the dark, so if you could assist the Lady Alumira down the stairs, she would be in your debt.
I would be honored to do so. As they walked arm in arm across the dark balcony and descended the marbled stair, the Shalane imagined the hall well lit and filled with the noises and smells of celebration. Ladies and lords danced in bright clothing to lively music, while others feasted and talked of trivialities with each other. As she and Jen came down, arm in arm and step by step, the dancing and music stopped. Voices hushed as all turned to watch them arrive. The assembled patrons bowed as she approached the floor, for here was beauty latched to strength, and while the ladies looked at her with envy, the men dared not look on her at all. When he was beside her, all were beneath her, and she was who everyone thought she was, strong, beautiful, and divine. The vision faded as they reached the door that led from the hall, the same door Shaitan had tried to drag her through so many weeks ago. The Shalane reluctantly let go of Jen's arm as he opened the door for her. After he was assured the hall was safe, he let her through and took up his normal position half a step behind her. The Dark Guard were visibly relieved at her safe return, and she hoped she hadn't caused Jen any trouble with Captain Tolbrook or Regent Ogbeth.
Thank you, Jen,
the Shalane said, turning as she opened her door.
I am sorry I was so cross earlier. Please forgive me.
There is no need. Sleep well. The Shalane closed the door, threw her veil in the corner and lay down. Sleep came quickly, and when she closed her eyes to dream, she was running.